All right, we're back. And thanks for joining us here on Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. It is Tech Radio with the Computer Guy, Science Friday, here on SDPB. And we have a lot to do today, going a lot of different places. But we start out by welcoming our guests coming up in a moment. They'll be Joel Brovelite and our Mac expert, and Amos Asip from SDN Communications, our home here for Tech Radio with the Computer Guys, and Jeff Litterick joining us in just a few moments. But first, we need to go to Pierre as we start out every Dakota Midday with our talk back with South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Victoria Wicks, who's reporting from Pierre. Vicki, good day. Thanks for joining us again.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
All right. We started out with a conversation today in the Senate State Affairs Committee, and the topic again today was guns.
That just got over, and yes, it's a Sentinel program, and it's a proposal to allow school boards to arm school personnel if they want to, and if the personnel want to carry firearms. This has been heard before on the House side. It was in House Education before. This time it was in State Affairs. Much bigger hearing room this time, so it might have been the same number of people, but they weren't as crammed in as before. Before, people were just kind of stepping over each other and standing around the edges. Senator Craig Teason from Rapid City brought the bill forward in this hearing. He's the former chief of police in Rapid City, and he has years of law enforcement experience. And he told the panel about, in 1991, a Stevens High School student took his class hostage with a shotgun. He first ordered the teacher out of the room, and one of the other students finally got control of the gun, and it didn't go off. And then a few years later, Columbine. He's a supporter of this program. In Rapid City schools, we have such big schools there that they do have police liaisons who do carry guns there. Senator Teason says that the DCI, the Division of Criminal Investigation with the Attorney General's Office, will train sentinels if the school district decides to take part in that.
Go ahead.
Okay. Opposition is coming from school boards, administrators, and teachers, people who are actually in the schools. And I haven't heard anyone who testified for this, either on the my memory tells me there was no one in the education side, and I didn't hear anyone today. Jeff Marlette is superintendent at New Underwood, and he's a retired brigadier general. And he had testified before at the House Education and also today, and he just essentially says if there's gunfire in a school, students are going to be injured or killed. And he just has qualms that people, even with training, would have the expertise to be able to handle that situation. And then Wade Pogany represents South Dakota school boards, and he proposed an amendment that just wipes out the Sentinel program and would establish a task force to study it. And that that had some legs, but Craig Teason was... He said that was disrespectful to disregard the work that everyone had done on the other one. And there was a discussion of closed meetings versus open meetings. If school boards are going to have arms in the school, should they do that in closed session so that people don't know, because it might be a security issue to have people on the outside knowing that there are guns in the school. But this board amended this bill to remove that section. So the decision will have to be made in open meetings, but then which administrator is carrying a gun, that could remain private. Senator Jason Frerichs asked why schools can't do this now, just deputize sentinels. And that question was asked in the early stages, too, in the House Education side, but I haven't heard an answer yet. And then... Senator Larry Roden made the point that there are more than 160 districts in the state, and they all have different needs, and this bill allows them to craft policies to fit their needs. In Rapid City, we have, armed police officers right in the school, but in some of these rural schools, the sheriff might be 30 minutes away, so they need to take care of their own problems.
So the committee passed through the bill, is that right?
They did, yes. Mm-hmm. And now it goes to the Senate floor for debate, and if it passes there, it'll go to the governor for his signature. And at one of the early press conferences in this session, one of the other reporters asked Dennis Dugard if he supports the bill. And at that time, he said he was not sure and that he would have to explore it further.
Has there been any conversation? I know this is always hard, but has there been any conversation on what the Senate, the full Senate, will thinks about this bill coming forward out of committee?
You know, the opposition in the, you know, among the State Affairs Committee was pretty strong today, so I think that there will be a lively debate. You know, I get that feeling. If I were betting, I would bet they'd pass it, but. I'm not a very good gambler.
You're not paid to bet. Yeah, neither you nor I are. That's right.
So
Anything else for us, Vicki?
I think that's it. I'll be filing stories later today, but that's it for now.
All right. Thank you very much. Victoria Wicks reporting live here on Dakota Midday from the Capitol in Pierre. And again, Allstate House, you can hear the hearing this morning and all. It's on our website at sdpb.org. And then just click on State House, and you can hear all of the live coverage that took place this morning. And again, sdpb.org, and that is /midday. Okay, we are back. This is the Computer Guys. We got a lot of different pieces going on here today. We will introduce our panel here. And again, we need to hook up another microphone. We'll take care of that in just a second. We are at SDN Communications in Sioux Falls, and three of our four regulars are with us. Amos Asip is here with our host at SDN Communications. Very good. Joel Brovelite, we'll get him on mic here in just a second. Our Mac guru, professional trombone player and bon vivant as we go. And also Jeff Litterick in Pierre with BIT in Pierre. Jeff, you're there. Good day on here on Midday.
Yes. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Again,
yep.
Thanks.
It's a much better day than yesterday here in Pierre, so.
Yeah, well, why don't you talk about that a little bit? What was it like in Pierre?
It actually wasn't too bad. It's just, you know, that's fog and snow all day long. So today is nice and sunny, though actually quite a bit colder than yesterday. So,
well, I think, Jeff, we're going to start out with you today. And earlier this this week, I guess we passed into some new territory when it comes to hacking into government networks is not a new thing. Hacking by state governments, or sovereign states, rather, might be another. Can you, for those who didn't hear the story, can you take us through and tell us what happened this week?
Yes. This is something that has been kind of known about for a long time, but very few people would ever really talk much about it. You might have heard it on the news, Congress complaining about the Chinese and hacking and stuff, and different companies, including Google, Apple, the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, some of the major TV networks also being complaining about Chinese hacking. Well, there's a security firm that deals with security incidents. They do investigations, so when a big company or for like the state of North Carolina has been hacked, they come in and they do all the investigative work. And they released a very long report basically pointing out the evidence why they believe that many of the hacks coming out of China are actually not only government-sponsored, they are actually a military unit, a military arm of the Chinese army. They actually pinpointed to the building itself in Shanghai and all the fiber optics and the military unit numbers and stuff for that particular unit and organization and structure. It's a very good report. We'll put a link up on our Facebook page if for the full report. You would probably just want to read the executive summary. It gets very detailed into their techniques and how they've been tracking them, not just this past year, but for many years. They've been active at least since 2004. They have broken into networks and stayed in networks, collecting terabytes of data from organizations over years period, undetected. This is an English-focused group attack. In fact, they even got the job requirements and recruiting requirements for this military unit, and English had to be almost a primary language. They focus this particular group called APT-1, or some people may call them the comment coders or comment hackers from their techniques. is basically kind of a structured group that goes in and they follow Chinese kind of strategic needs and wants and break into mainly industry. They're targeting, if you're doing a deal with the Chinese, they're targeting your email accounts, information about the deal, any kind of economic advantage they can find. That's what they're really looking for. It's not so much, and I'm sure they can go after governments and stuff, but they're really breaking into egg industries, into anything that they think could give them a strategic economic advantage, not necessarily military, but economic advantage. And the report goes over some very detailed explanation about deals that suddenly were very favorable in the Chinese direction after those organizations were hacked by the Chinese and information stolen. So it's a very good read. We'll put that up there. And while China is denying all this stuff, it's pretty well known that this kind of goes on by many a country. It's just the first time that there's been a written proof detailing all the evidence and methodology saying, yes, this is why we believe this. This is our proof. You're going to have to refute that proof, and no one has been able to refute that proof yet. So,
I got to tell you, as I listen to you describe, it is amazing how much information those in the U.S. tracking this know. I mean, to the building and recruitment documents on who they want to do the hacking.
Yeah,
to me, that sounds pretty amazing.
It took them quite a few years to do this. This was not a 6-month investigation. This was a culmination of different incidents, over 170 they investigated personally over a 5-6 year period. Massive amounts of Google searching. The Chinese did very good to hide their tracks, but every once in a while a document would slip here or there that they would be able to find, like from the Chinese telecom paying the fiber into the building. IP addresses and domains they had registered under different names and under different patterns, and by following the patterns they could find more and more evidence. So it took a very long time to actually kind of put together, and we now feel that the Chinese group will now change all their habits, of course, to make them even harder to detail and see if it's that group. The important thing to realize is they stole, terabytes upon terabytes of data, and it was for economic advantage mainly. If you're doing business with them, you have to be aware of that particular. This is a cyber warfare type thing, but it's cyber warfare for economic means.
Has there been any word on how businesses have reacted to this news and those that are getting hacked? Or again, is that something that they've kind of known all along?
Well, you have the last couple weeks of the news organizations coming out saying we've been hacked. Apple said they came out and been hacked also, though they had it, couldn't find any information they had lost. Google was hacked, the Gmail, especially Gmail accounts in the past. You don't really get into how they defend and how they deal with it, because then that just gives the attackers a leg up to reinfect or re-get into their networks. So they're pretty mute about that. Congress, there have been some very angry meetings and senators and representatives in Congress talking about sanctions and stuff like that, but I don't really think at this point you're going to see much of a real consequence to China for these actions.
Has there been a response by those in, for lack of a better term, the security industry in this country, security? Have they reacted in some way, or what have they had to say?
It's been mostly, we've always figured this. They're taking the information that's been released and dealing with it to try to isolate and find out other attacks and other networks that have been hacked. But it's kind of, this is in par of the day. This is normal. I mean, all networks get attacked constantly anymore. It's nice we get some more information on how to defend ourselves, though we feel that the attackers will actually, change the patterns now. But it's basically just like every day. It's beating down the tax, fine if you've been compromised and dealing with them.
Guys, how come I keep having this vision of the new FX network show, Americans?
popping through my head.
Which is a great show, by
which
the way.
Which is a great show, by the way. Yeah. Tell you what, if we're ready back in the studio, we'll take a short break and we'll continue. I know what some of the things we want to talk about today are 3D printing and what adult like me is having a problem getting my mind wrapped around it. And also the introduction of the new gaming platform this week, or the new version, is that PS4.
Yes,
very good.
My
PlayStation 4. My daughter had some very pointed comments on that, which I'll share. We, of course, want to hear from you as well. If you have computer questions, want to get in on the conversation, the number you can call is 800-524-3614. That's 800-524-3614. Or you can email your question to midday@sdpb.org. I'm Joe Telustis in for Kent Osborne, who is off covering state high school wrestling for SDPB. We'll have some information on that coming up as well. We'll take a short break. We'll be back. You're listening to Tech Radio with the Computer Guys on Dakota Midday on SDPB Radio. Welcome back to Dakota Midday, Tech Radio with the Computer Guys here on Science Friday on SDPB Radio. Here, well, I tell you, it's been just a harried morning here. I even got the phone number wrong. Jesus, thanks a lot. Thanks to me. Thank you to you. It is 800-524-3604 is the number. Of course, that's our regular midday number, 800-524-3604. Or midday email at sdpb.org. Yesterday, gentlemen, I was listening to Talk of the Nation, and it was about the third conversation that various NPR shows had had this week about the 3D printer. And I remember reading about the 3D printer some time ago, but I was up to a certain point, I was having a real time wrapping my head around it. But then I remembered I've worked with a 3D printer, and it was at the dentist's office.
Oh, yeah.
Where I had a crown to be made, and they did a scan, and they have a machine. I didn't think of it as a printer, and they did it right there, and boom, in, and fit great, and away we go. I guess in my mind, I watched too much Star Trek, and I think there's one – is my problem that there's one machine that can make anything? It's all these different printers, or
well, I don't.
Where am I going wrong?
I don't think you're necessarily wrong. I think they're specialized machines right now, and usually limited by the material that is doing the printing. First, let's just talk about 3D printers
yeah,
and
please.
About what we mean about that. And it's funny that we have to define it, because I think before printing on paper, I think everybody would have expected things to be able to be printed 3D, so it's not that huge a jump. Mm-hmm. But instead of printing, on a single sheet of paper, you can think of a 3D printer as printing the different layers of the object on a single sheet every time. And then as you stack that paper up, your object is made of all of those several layers that are made. And what happens is, it just lays these little dots of, could be metal, could be foam, could be plastic, could be polymer, could be wax, could be any substance really, glue. And eventually you get a very finished looking product. And they've actually had this technology for quite a while, but the leaps have been made lately with being able to drop those dots of different material, like I said, metal, wood, and have such a fine particle that the object has a finished look to it. You know, it's polished or it's smooth, because the earliest 3D printers were very rough, you know, kind of equal to your dot matrix, if you want to use the analogy for an actual printer. So the advances lately have been just very fine particles, and of what those particles are made. I personally have seen 3D printers print objects of metal polymer that, it was a crescent wrench. And when it was finished printing, not only was the crescent wrench printed with the mechanism mm-hmm. to adjust the mouth, it was printed with that. You didn't have to put it together. It was printed with the mechanism already assembled, but it was strong enough to put a lug nut on a vehicle.
Jeez.
So, and this is, and that was a year and a half ago. 3D printing is going to change manufacturing worldwide, and it's also going to change what we do at home. Right now, if you have a party and you're running out to get red forks for your daughter's third birthday party because that's the color you're doing, in 10 years, I have no doubt you'll go to the office and your little HP 3D printer, it won't be called a 3D printer, it'll just be called a printer because it'll be able to print on paper, and you'll just kick out 14 forks of a food-based, the biodegradable polymer that are in the color that you want. And that's coming. That's coming to your house in the next, 7 years. By 2019, which isn't far away, 3D printer sales are going to top $7 billion, jeez, is the projection.
So, again, the raw material that's there, is it out of line to, you know, you draw the parallel between a dot matrix printer and a mm-hmm. you know and a higher end printer, can it be like there's a cartridge?
Yeah, and that's what I think major manufacturers mm-hmm. like HP, Epson, those the companies we're used to for printers, and some startup companies are working on so that it can be put into say an office situation or a home situation where you can buy the consumables because that's a great business for anyone is consumables.
Yeah, sure.
And you can just drop in a cartridge and print the type of thing that you want to print. There's another type of printing that's done rather than adding layers like I described. What it does is actually shoots very small droplets of glue in an existing suspension of a polymer. And then what it does is solidifies as it dries. So what you do is you reach into this basically a box of polymer mm-hmm. and you pull out your thing and maybe you clean it up. Maybe you don't. It depends on, you know, how new your technology is. So there's a couple different ways to do that. But yeah, I think eventually you'll see consumable, what we think of as ink cartridges, which will be more like material cartridges. And it's going to be everything from, nylon or polymer all the way up to wood, glass, metal. They've got prototype of all of those materials already ready.
You know, I think one of the greatest possible uses of this would be where you have an existing device at home, and this is where I've seen the examples. Say you're vacuuming, and one of the cogs in the motor breaks, and it's made out of some sort of nylon or mm-hmm. some sort of polymer as well. Rather than having to go and search out that item, you go to the manufacturer's website, you download the item from their website and print it out in your 3D printer, and all of a sudden mm-hmm. you've got this cog that's exactly the same size, that has the right specifications, and just fits right in. You didn't have to go get it. And so being able to download actual physical objects that then you spit out through whatever device it is that's printing these, I think will be a great realization of that.
So, yeah, there's already been things in the news, kind of the darker side of that, where, there are plans for 3D printers that have been able to produce with a few added parts, things like handguns can be 3D printed right now. Really, the only limitation is the compactness that you get for the barrel itself. You have to add that because it's, 3D printer polymer isn't strong enough, at least on the kind of prosumer level, meaning the $10,000, $8,000, $6,000 printer, it's not strong enough to withstand a blast. But you can bet that those are coming.
So now, the way things are going, would it print the components, and then you put the components together? Or is it more like the wrench?
There's two ways to do it. The higher end stuff, by what's being tested and what's being done in manufacturers, they're completely assembled and not limited to color or material. I mean, they could be assembled, made out of glass, wood, metal, and printed, and there's no assembly required. The guy takes it out of a box or out of the thing and puts it in a box and sells it. That's what it's going to be like. But on the lower level, yeah, you're going to probably have to assemble those things. Mm-hmm. But that's not how it's going to wind up being in real life. They're going to be completely assembled. It's going to be very much like your Star Trek example, where you would go over to the machine.
The replicator,
that's what mm-hmm. it was called. And you'd ask for something, and you'll get it. And that's what it's actually going to be like. It's going to be limited for some things. You're not going to be able to print a laptop right away, but it's not going to be long.
What are the major hurdles that in that 4 or 5 year period that you mentioned when a lot of these things will be happening? What are the major hurdles that have to be overcome?
Well, you know, the technology for laying down the polymer or whatever the material is, that's all set. That's just going to get finer and finer. But I mean that the little particles of material are going to get smaller and smaller, so the products will get more finished. That, I think, that mechanism they've got worked out. What they're really working on is the materials themselves, the polymer that gets injected, and the strength of that material. And I think that's the hurdle that people are getting over right now. Because there are machines, like I mentioned, that wrench that printed out and was usable. It's not as usable as one that's forged from cast iron. You know, it may not last that long. However, because the material is recyclable and you can print 3 or 4, you know, you don't have to spend $80 on a semi wrench when you can print one for 80 cents worth of material. So that may not be it, but that's where it is. It's in the material and the strength and durability of the material. Because even if you can print a set of tennis shoes that will work, if they only work for a day and you got to print a new one every time, you know, people are still not that used to throwing things away that quickly. I think you're still going to
be. And you know, we are right now only at the point where we can print something that is of the same exact material throughout. You can't print
No, that's actually not true. In fact, I think it's HP has a model printer that they showed, I think it was at CES, where it was printing two types of material, basically two print heads.
Sure.
And it's the stack-up kind where you print one level and then you print another level. It's very slow right now, especially with that. But, you know, it's not going to be long where that's just not going to be an issue. It's like when I remember when a color printer was a color regular printer that we're used to was a big deal because you could only print in black and white. And then those first color printers would come out and it would be literally 4 times or longer to print the same image. So people just wouldn't. That's what it's going to be like with 3D printing.
Amos,
and multiple materials. Sorry.
Amos, when you were describing the vacuum cleaner part, it flashed on me. And it generationally, I think of when I'm up at my farm and where I'm 25 miles from retailers and something breaks, I have to hop in the truck. I got to go all the way there. It might be for a screw or a connector of some kind.
Sure.
And all you would need is electricity and
internet access.
Yep. And your machine with you.
And $1 million machine.
Yeah.
Sitting there, right.
Right now.
How,
yeah.
How big are these things? How big are these?
Well, I've seen them the size of the size of a duffel bag, and a lot of the heavy manufacturing ones are you know the size of a kitchen cabinet. They're quite large, or bigger, I should say. Maybe the size of a vending machine. It depends on the material and you know the heat of the material. You know, if you're talking metal and high tensile strength polymer, you know, they generate a lot of heat. But, you know, $10,000 or $100,000 is nothing to a manufacturer when you can eliminate all sorts of, you know, jobs with it. And people get scared of that, you know, eliminating jobs. But what it's going to do is make things a lot cheaper. Like you're talking about that screw that you have to go get. If you got to order it and pay online, it might be $40 or even $4. You can print it for downloading the plan for free or for 40 cents. It just moves the scale around a lot.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, it creates new jobs in that you have to figure out the raw materials, how they're going to be delivered, how they're going to be designed.
Makes education so much more important. You know, when I hear people talk about, you know, we need to get manufacturing jobs going, I'm like, boy, you're going to get them going just in time for them to get the rug pulled out underneath them with 3D printing. I really do believe that. 3D printing is coming to everywhere by 2020. Everywhere.
Wow. Again, our number, if you want to be part of the conversation, you have any computer questions, anything of a technology nature, 800-524-3604, 800-524-3604, or you can email a question at midday@sdpb.org. Let's turn our attention now to the new PS4, and I will be the first to admit I don't spend a lot of my life being a fuddy-duddy, but I'm not a gamer. I have gamers that I know, and I have gamers that are in my house. I know you guys, I know, Jeff, why don't we start with you? PS4, what makes it new? What makes it great? And what's the early read?
Well, it's kind of an interesting early read. Sony announced the specs, but actually hasn't shown any hardware outside of the new controller. We do know that if it's a mixture of basically the old-style PlayStation philosophies with the DualShock, the controller looks a lot like it, except it's a little bit redesigned, and the older controllers won't work with the new one. And it has basically Microsoft's Kinect video system built into the console you buy, too. The more interesting kind of thing is, though they have a lot of games showing, it used to be, and we have yet to see the new Xbox and its specs, is Sony's kind of gone against the grain of all of its previous consoles in that they always created very high-end custom hardware. So when they came out with a new console, be it the PlayStation 2 or the PlayStation or even the PlayStation 3, it was so much better for gaming than anything else, except for the current rival new game consoles. That wasn't even funny. I mean, it would be for $500, you'd get better than a PC for gaming. Though over the lifespan of the console, PCs would catch up and mobiles would catch up into power of what that existing game console was. This time, they released a console that's basically a PC in a wrapper. I mean, it's running a PC CPU, a PC graphics card, basic PC configurations. It's even a, you know, not an Intel, but an AMD CPU that runs, could run Windows just fine on it. And it's only about the power of a mid-range to high-end PC as of today. There's not any one component that can't be beat already in a very high-end PC. But they did show a lot of games, and that's what we'll have to probably sell the system. No one knows the price yet. Some people are speculating right around $500 for the amount of hardware they're putting in, which is cheaper than if you got a PC with the same amount of performance for gaming at this point, but not probably by next year. So it is kind of interesting that they're changing their philosophy. We'll know more as we get closer to the release date, which will be this fall sometime. But it's basically they kind of took the best from Nintendo and Xbox and kind of incorporate it, and basically it's kind of a PC. So it's going to be an interesting time, especially more when we see the new Xbox and its specs.
What are the reviewers saying about it? What's been the word so far?
You know, they really like the demos, and this is a system that's not going to have any problem pushing out HD, even 3D HD at really good visuals. A lot of this has happened in graphics card technology in the past 4 or 5 years. It is going to be a much better system than what's out currently. The problem is it's not going to be the 4K TV killer app because it's not going to really be able to push 4K resolutions. And that's what the next gen of TVs is all about, is higher resolutions in the 4K range. So that's kind of interesting, too. Even the very highest-end PC game cards, the $1,000 cards, are the ones you need to push 4K today. So it's kind of understandable but kind of sad, too. We were hoping for some more customized hardware that can maybe push the next gen of TV sales. But it's going to be a very good console and going to be able to push current TVs very hard with very excellent displays, as all the demos showed. But it'll be interesting to see more information about used games and the streaming of games, where you can share games with your friends online and stream them. We do know it will not be backwards compatible with the older games unless you stream them from a site, kind of like what Nintendo does. But there's no issue if you've already bought the game, do you get to stream it free and play an older game, or do you have to pay for it again to be able to stream and play the older versions of the game? So there'll be a lot more information coming out. It's kind of the teaser. It's an interesting teaser, and there's a lot of people on both sides of the fence about this one, mainly because it is basically a PC in a box. So,
how big an issue is the not being backwards compatible? Because that's the first thing my daughter brought up, and I I operate part of my world in the aftermarket, and I see the carcasses of past systems quite regularly going on there. How big of an issue is that?
Usually people make it a bigger issue than it really is. It's kind of interesting because for the systems that did used to have backward compatibility, the actual people that would take advantage of it was kind of small. Most people already have the older gaming system if they want to play the older games anyway, so it becomes kind of a moot point there. Nintendo actually had a great deal where they can stream the older NES and Super Nintendo. I mean, consoles you can no longer find in good condition anymore. But you had to rebuy those games if you wanted to play them, though they were relatively cheap. It kind of comes down to price in that one. I find, you know, I tend to play the newer games, and every once in a while, for very classic games, I'll go back and play an older game, but really, you load it up, you look at the graphics and the gameplay and say, well, I'm going to go back to the newer games because they're just better. I mean, time has marched on. Though there are a few timeless games, there's very few of those.
Maybe a question for all three of you. And again, the phone number, if you want to be part of our conversation, 800-524-3604, is... are we on our way to one appliance?
No.
No?
No. I think there's going to be many appliances in one cloud. I think that's what we're looking at. Mm-hmm. And in fact, with PS4, they're moving, and I think rather smartly, to kind of an all-cloud-based setup, at least for dispersion. I still very strongly believe that the day of the console is limited, and I think Sony sees that too with the PlayStation, is making at least a foot in the door effort to try and transition themselves that way, and I applaud them for that.
Are there going to be I guess it's silly, there will be winners and losers, I guess. Who stands to lose the most as these things happen? Is the manufacturers, or I think of HP, they're going to be so busy making 3D printers that they aren't going to.
Funny you mentioned that, and this is some news that we kind of skipped over about 3 months ago. HP really, really wants to stay in the printer market very badly, and they care very little about anything else at this point. And that's because they see that 3D printing is such a huge deal, and because of that, and. I think manufacturing a device that is a standalone thing that just plays games just makes so much less sense as we go forward. And the people that stand to lose, to your original question, I think, are the companies that aren't flexible enough to go, okay, well, that thing that we did for 40 years isn't going to work anymore, so we need to figure out a way to do that. Apple had big troubles with that and pulled out of it. I think Microsoft is figuring that out. Time will tell if other companies do that. You know, Dell had to go private, and their profits are down now in their first release of being privatized. But if they can't be nimble and get off of hardware, at least as their major thing, that could be a casualty there.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Google Glass, among some other things, too. Our number, again, 800. Is 800-524-3604, midday at sdpb.org. This is Dakota Midday and Tech Radio with Computer Guys on SDPB Radio. Welcome back to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Joe Telestis in for Ken Osborne, who's away at the aforementioned state wrestling tournaments. And again, go to sdpb.org, and starting tomorrow evening and on Saturday, we'll have television coverage for you as well. Saturday, television coverage from the Class A and AA tournaments. We are here on the Computer Guys Tech Radio with Amos Asap from SDN Communications, Joe Brovelite with us at SDN, and our Apple expert, Jeff Litterick, with BIT and Peer is with us as well. Amos, Google Glass.
Google Glass, kind of a cool new technology, new toy, really, for lack of a better term for it, but really a set of eyeglasses that you wear that has a heads-up display. They call it an augmented reality head mount display, officially from Google. Has a monitor in it so you can see things. It's very tiny. It sits above your eye, so you need to look up to see it so that it doesn't obscure your vision. But also has a built-in camera and interacts with you via natural language. So when you're looking at something, you can say, you know, take a picture of this or record a video of that. Some of the other interesting uses I've seen that they're projecting is maybe someone who's out skiing, snow skiing, and going down a mountain can get a heads up display on where their friends are at on that mountain, or how fast they're going, or you know, here is the next obstacle that you should watch out for, and you know, it can project that on your vision. Should be a cool technology, and actually just recently released. If you hit the Google Glass webpage, you too can get in on it if you tell them in 50 words or less why, what you would do with it, and you promise to pay the $1,500 fee for the developer version of those. So, you know, it's something that is going to be really unique for the first people who get in on it.
What's the status of the product right now? Is it here? Is it coming?
It's coming. It's one of those things that, again, if you promise to get in on the on the early editions and give them feedback and make honest reviews and critiques and use it in a way that would benefit them with good information, you can get started with that. And I believe they're not going to have those devices out until probably later in the fall, maybe early next year. But
just in time for holiday giving.
Right. Mm-hmm. But in that case, they're being very selective on who gets them. You can't just go out and purchase them at your local big box store. But I think probably within the next 3 years, you might be able to order them online or get them somewhere. And of course, as all technology does, this is really just the beginning of adding this augmented reality or the natural speech language. I think we talked about it when Siri first came out, about how this sort of interaction with our machines, with our devices, is going to become ubiquitous across all the different types of devices, whether it's something you wear, something you use in your kitchen, something that's in your car. We're going to see this sort of technology everywhere.
The thing that flashed through my mind this time is I'm glad it's going to be 3 years ahead. That'll give the Sioux Falls City Council and the legislature time to come up with a rule to ban it while driving.
Yeah, I, you know, you mentioned that. I talked about that with my wife. I said, we're going to have to figure out a new way to make laws as technology moves too quickly. We're not going to be able to make a law fast enough to take care of the things as they get released pretty soon. You know, they're banning texting and driving. I predict in 2 or 3, maybe 4 years, people won't be texting using their thumbs. They'll just be talking. So that there'll be laws on the books that'll be useless.
That is a really good really good thing to think about, though. When you think about the makeup of, for whatever reason, the makeup of legislatures and different governing bodies, they may not be the group that is the most tech savvy to make what will end up being huge decisions.
Yeah, we could do a whole show on that.
So let's go to the caller then. Let's go to Sam, who has a gaming question. Sam, welcome to Tech Radio with the Computer Guys.
I'll be brief. All I was curious about was whether or not the gaming industry is going to incorporate the new Fusion Drive that Apple is coming out with, where it combines a hard drive and a solid-state drive into one package for increased performance.
I can,
you know,
answer this.
Go
one
ahead, Jeff.
Briefly, because that was one of the big disappointments, was support for SSDs in the PlayStation 4. It is announced the PlayStation 4 will have a hard drive, a very big hard drive, but it will just be a hard drive. You may be able to swap it out with a full SSD, but right now it cost is so much of a factor in the gaming side of things that. And they want to do so much more with video and Netflix streaming and their own movie services and stuff like that. And permanent game downloads where you download games over the net instead of buying them on the CDs. They might come up with hybrids in the future, but I would not expect any of that stuff. It's just going to add too much to the bottom line for at least this next generation of consoles.
So it would be
yes,
user serviceable consoles where we could replace the old hard drives with new hard drives.
The PlayStation 3 currently is like that, where you can replace the hard drives. And if you wanted to put an SSD or an SSD accelerator in there, you could. We do not know yet on the PlayStation 4 if the hard drives will be user serviceable. No one's even seen a picture of the actual PlayStation 4 form factor yet to know. But Sony's always done that. Microsoft, you have to buy their drives or you have to hack the box. If you don't buy their drives, it just doesn't work. So you get two kind of competing philosophies there. And then Nintendo just doesn't support hard drives or any really high storage capacity at all. So it'll be interesting to see when we see what the Xbox comes out with. And on user change out of the PlayStation 4 hard drive, you're probably going to have to wait until this summer before you'd know for sure if that would be possible.
Okay, Sam, and thank you for your call. Appreciate it. We'll move on. Business question, Joel, about Apple. Apple is sitting on one of the biggest piles of money anywhere.
Almost the biggest pile of money. Mm-hmm. There are countries that wish they had as much money as mm-hmm. Apple. And it's getting into a lot of trouble lately with investors, several lawsuits on the books based on Apple kind of hoarding their cash. And I don't think they look at it as hoarding their cash. They're just such a big company technology-wise. I think they have always been careful to keep a buffer so that if an iPhone 5 completely tanks, that it doesn't pull them under, as it has several other companies, things like that. But they just came out of a meeting, actually, with some Wall Street people Wall Street, I'm blanking on the name, that is going to try and help them smooth things over with their investors and basically give them ideas of places they could put their earnings rather than what they don't want to do. And I think you could argue this one way or the other, is just send all that money back to the investors, and then they lose this huge advantage where they can, you know, pick the best technology companies out there and buy them and integrate that into their business, which has been a huge winner for them for the past 10 years. So it's yet to be seen, but definitely some big troubles for Apple and their giant Scrooge McDuck money bin.
Mm-hmm. We just have a couple of minutes left. I heard somebody commenting the other day, and it was their concern about Apple, is that Apple has done so well and sold so many products and made so much money because they've always had that new thing, the next big thing, and people really had the a demand for it. Is that going to be an albatross around their neck? Is that going to be
I think it's always albatross there? Around. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's always a problem. You know, they can put out a great phone like the iPhone 5, and, you know, because it doesn't, walk your dog for you, people are disappointed. I think the next big thing for Apple is going to be wearable technology, things like Google Glass.
All right, very good. Do we hear the music? That means we're about out of time. We want to thank you for joining us here on Tech Radio with the Computer Guys, Joel Brovelite, Amos Asap here at SDN Communications in Sioux Falls, Jeff Litterick and Bitten Pier. Gentlemen, thank you. And Ken will be back next time, so do stay with us for more Science Friday on Talk of the Nation on SDPV Radio. Thank you.